Hi everyone, Emily Alexina back here with you today for another episode. Today, Sam's story is finally going to be shared. We recorded this episode over a month ago now. And again, my kids got sick and I kind of crashed. I had a bit of a burnout after taking care of all these sick people over the winter and have been just recovering through April and through the gloomy weather and sometimes overdoing it, needing some rest, and overdoing it with the kids, I mean, by being outside and busy and just doing more things, and then finding, holy moly, I'm still not really sleeping and nursing and needing to come home and rest and take things slowly. My husband's also working on a big project, and so that means I've been with the kids a lot more with much less free time. So less time to work on the podcast episodes, but we'll do what we can little by little. This story here, I will share a trigger warning for anyone who is pregnant. There are, you know, some things that we talk about that could be hard to hear, especially if you're choosing a birth in the system and wanting to just go along with it. Right now might not be the best time to listen to this episode unless you want to know what actually can happen in the system. Because the opposite side of that is that if you are pregnant, I think we want to know what happens in the hospitals, what happens in the system, what really needs to happen, and what doesn't need to happen. We will touch upon a lot of these things with this episode with Sam today, as we cover a lot of the policies and protocols and things that we are told by our medical practitioners, midwives, or obstetricians, and what is actually scientifically true or even just physiologically true, and what isn't, and what it looks like to navigate the system. Now, what is encouraging about these stories is that Sam went on to, after her two cesareans, have two home births outside of the system. So I think that, and that second part will be coming out a week after this episode airs. And so listening to the contrast of that experience in the system and then outside of the system, I know too that there are many women wanting VBACs and home births after cesareans. And I think that these stories are going to be really encouraging and inspiring for you. So let's jump right into it. Hi, Sam. Thanks so much for joining me today. We'll jump right in with your story wherever you want to start it.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Samantha. I have four children. Their ages are 13. She's turning 11. The next one is turning 7. And then I have a 2-year-old. And I've been a doula for a while now. I started just after my daughter was, my first daughter was born. So I don't know, like, what's that, 10 years ago now. And yeah, I got into birth work because I was rather disappointed with my first two birth experiences, and I wanted something better for myself, and I wanted to be able to help other people along the way as well. And I was just doing so much reading, so much research after my second birth went sideways, and I'm just like, why did this happen to me? And that feeling of wanting to know more and to understand why things went the way they did, that's what led me to birth work. And I was so disappointed with my first two births because I had planned home births for them rented the water birth pool and everything like that, and never got to use it, and ended up with C-sections for both of them. And I just thought, this doesn't seem right. Like, it makes sense, you know, if something goes wrong and then it happens one time, I'm like, okay, that things happen. Things don't always happen the way you want them to. And yeah, so when it happened twice, I was like, maybe it's not just, you know, stuff happening. Maybe it's, there's something wrong here. So,
And were you with
but
midwives for both those births?
yeah, so like when I was in university, I'd already decided, even like so long before I got pregnant, that I wanted to have natural births, that I didn't want any medications, that I wanted to have home birth. And I knew, or I thought I knew, that if I chose midwifery care, that's what's going to set me up for success with those types of goals. I didn't know anything about the medical system or how it worked in Ontario at the time when I did that. I was just reading, you know, ethnographies and you know, stuff from the states where the midwifery system and the healthcare system is entirely different. In the states, they have like direct entry midwives who kind of, but yeah, their education is entirely different than in Ontario. So, and then there's a midwifery model of care, but there's also people who practice midwifery that don't practice a midwifery model of care. They practice medical model of care, and there's no really easy way to figure out who's who and what's what. So, at least in the social context that we live in here in Ontario. So, yeah, I thought when I talked to people about this, I was like, I thought I was buying this ticket to get on this natural birth ride. And what ended up happening is I ended up on this like medical excursion. You know, I got on a different ride and I didn't know it at the time. So
Right.
that's what's led it to my disappointment on one hand and trauma. Because I did have a lot of post-traumatic stress symptoms and problems after my second one was born specifically. Although I can't say my first one was a walk in the park either. So,
And so, do you
yeah.
want to share a little bit about the details of those births? You have four births to kind of cover, but do you
I
want to
know
share?
it's a lot. I don't know how much to get into because it's going to take a long time if I talk about all four of them. But okay, so my first one, everything went perfectly up until labor. I went into labor with him in the nighttime. I called my midwife. She said to me, "Oh, well, you know, just call me back when the contractions are like this far apart, in you know, the 5-1-1, 5 minutes apart, lasting a minute long, you know, at a minute intervals, right?" So what I did was I waited until that point. I invited my doula to join us. We were laboring really well. We were setting up the birth pool, and that's when I'm like, "Oh, we need to call the midwife because we've gotten to that point now that she said she wanted to be contacted at us." So then she came and she checked me, and she's like, "Well, the presenting part is not his head. She thought it was his shoulder. So you can't have a vaginal birth that way, if shoulder's coming first." So it was like, "Let's go to the hospital and you're looking at a C-section." So we got in the car, we went to
Whoa.
the hospital. You know, for an actual true complication, you know, according to anybody's definition of that. And when we got there, the first thing they did is ultrasound, and the OB, like, he just looked at my midwife with the like superiority and disgust. That you might expect from an ill-mannered professional. And he was like, "This is not a shoulder. This is a knee. Like, this is a breech birth." And so it was a breech birth. At the time, there's no options for a breech birth aside from C-section. So that's what happened.
And so with palpation, she couldn't tell the baby was breech. And had you had ultrasounds leading up to that?
I had the whole gamut of typical prenatal care. for my son, so there shouldn't have been this surprise,
Right.
but there was, you know, it happens. At his ultrasounds, he was head down, so at some point late in pregnancy, he turns, and I even thinking back on it, like after I had the C-section, I'm like, I know when he flipped, and then, you know, as I was always like kind of confused whenever I went into my prenatal appointments with my midwives, because like after that point when he flipped, when I was like lying on a lawn chair out like at the cottage, and I was, you know, pretty relaxed, and then he decided to do this big woo woo woo, and like I could see my stomach going flopping back and forth in this big somersault, and after that he kind of stayed in the same position, you know, as a mother pregnant with him. I just had this feeling that he was like craning his neck out all the time so that I'd rub his head, and that was at the top of my abdomen. So when I went into my appointments, they're like, oh yeah, he's head down, and I'm like, well, if his head is down, then what's he sticking out? Like, he wants me to rub his bum, but then that didn't make sense to me as as his mother. You know.
So it would have been after the point of a last ultrasound, and their palpations obviously weren't very informed.
Well, I don't want to like I don't want to criticize the skill of the midwives in their palpation techniques or whatever. I think this happens sometimes. It's like as someone who's tried to palpate other people and figure out what's where, I it's not an exact science, right? It's a skill that requires a lot of time, and when midwives rely a lot on ultrasounds for their information, I don't know how much they really develop that skill because they don't really have to, right? So, but on the other hand, they see, you know, thousands of clients in their career. So, but you know, mistakes get made is what I'm saying, I guess. So I don't know if it was, I can't say for sure whether it was their skill or not skill or whether it was just me. I had a bit of a baby that had a, we were joking about it after, well, he's a bit of a butthead, like,
Amazing.
so
That's so funny.
And with my next pregnancy, I went back to the same midwives, you know, because I like them. I like as people, they were great people. It's just they couldn't do for me what I wanted, which is unfortunate. So yes, yeah. So the C-section happened, and you know, it was my first one. So it was just I was mostly just absorbed with how to be a mother with my first one, as opposed to, you know, worrying about what kind of birth experience I just had. Obviously, I didn't like it because it's not what I wanted. But at the same time, I was well, you know, stuff happens, and I was able to let it go pretty quickly, I guess, afterwards. But immediately after I had a C-section, I was like, oh, my next one, this is not happening again. Like, we're gonna, you know, have the birth I want next time.
I think it
And
can be easy when it's like, well, there was no other choice, so it's kind of easy to let it go that way.
yeah, I think so, because like there really wasn't. And you know, even a few months after his birth, I read an article in the newspaper about how they had recently done a study, and they reversed the findings that it is always safer to have a C-section for a breech. So when I read that, that was my first like moment where I had a bit of pain about it, I guess, like emotionally speaking. And I was like, oh, you know, if this had just been published, you know, a few months later or earlier, sorry, yeah, earlier, then maybe things could have been different. And that was my first kind of thought about how maybe it didn't need to be that way.
And also the
But
first pain, like you said, that first emotional hit, because I work with a lot of women who have undergone trauma, and when they start learning that it could have been different, it's really painful.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Okay.
so yeah, that was my first sort of like aha moment when I read that. I was like, oh, so the reason that it went this way is in a way arbitrary, right?
Yes.
Like, what's the difference between a few months saying that, oh, this is the right way to do it, and then a few months later they reverse their findings that this is the right way to do it, or there could be more options for women, right? And then that just seems so arbitrary to me, and then that's, I guess, what made it go from something inevitable going to, oh, there could have been an option here. There could have been different things decided and a different outcome based on that date. So yeah, so then I got pregnant with my next one, and it was different experience with prenatal care, because in my first one I went from perfectly healthy pregnancy, absolutely nothing to even cause any concern, to, oh, this is a VBAC client. And that's a whole other ball game. That's a difficult thing to navigate if you don't know what you're getting into ahead of time. And I didn't think it would be a big deal. I thought I had one C-section. The reason for the C-section was not because of me. It was just because of how he was positioned, and that seemed
And
just kind of like a
because of the
random thing.
system, like the lack
And
of skill in the system, right? It
well, I
actually
didn't know
wasn't.
that at the time. I just figured it was his fault. I'm like, if the guy had just put his head down and gone out the way he was supposed to go, then everything would have been fine, right? Because the labor experience was great up until, I mean, it hurt a bit, but it was great up until she checked me and figured out he was, not coming, not presenting with his head first. So, yeah. So, yeah. So, second time around, I was like, there's nothing wrong. There's no reason why I would choose a second C-section or need a second C-section. So, like, but then just the way it is, it's just like, it was a stressful sort of thing because I insisted upon having a home birth, and my one midwife was like, yeah, okay, we can probably help you with that. And then the other one was busy spending her time discouraging me from making that choice my whole pregnancy. So I later learned that she had been at a trial of labor that had been an intended home birth and resulted in a uterine rupture. The outcome was fine, like, though the clients lived, the baby lived, the uterus was intact, it was all fine, but I guess that rattled the midwife that didn't want me to have a home birth. And
Home birth, VBAC, yeah.
VBAC home birth, yeah, she probably would have been perfectly fine with other home births, but yeah, my particular case was triggering her, what do you call it, vicarious trauma, I suppose. So yeah, so she was also training a midwifery student at the time. And so her and the midwifery student, it felt like every appointment was the two of them ganging up on me to talk me out of it. And I couldn't be persuaded because I just couldn't see it from their perspective. They're saying, oh, there's th let's talk about what a uterine rupture looks like. It's like, you've got 10 minutes to make it from home to the hospital and surgery before you bleed out and your baby dies, and then you could lose your uterus and yada yada yada. So it was just yeah, I know, that's no pressure, right?
And how did you stay certain in what you wanted? Did you end up attempting a home birth?
Yeah, we did. Well, I just couldn't see it from their perspective, because they would say a statistic like, I can't remember what they gave me at the time. One of them, the other midwife that was more encouraging, she sent me like a study, and it was a study conducted in Europe, so not at all relevant to the Ontario context because they practice medicine differently in Europe. But anyways, it was one that she had at hand, and she shared it with me, and in it was like, I think it was about an 80 something percent chance of success with a trial of labor and resulting in a vaginal birth. And then the other 20% ended up with a C-section.
Was that at home or
So
at the hospital or?
it was a hospital managed thing, I think. I can't remember what country they did it. We're thinking back like 10 years now, so
Yeah.
if my memory is not correct, then that's why.
And I think unless it was England, there isn't much home birth happening in the other European countries.
Yeah, I know it varies a lot depending on what European country you're in, but the point
Yeah.
is it wasn't in Ontario, so it wasn't relevant to here.
And it
Because
still was
you're
80%
it was
too, right?
80%, which is
Yeah.
amazing. That's a pretty decent VBAC rates, right?
Yep.
So they had a and I looked at that as someone who was not like in a birth professional in any way at that time, and I said, well, that means I have an 80% chance of success. Like, why not go that way? Because that's what I want,
Right.
right? And then, but they're looking at it the other way. And then when they presented me with statistics on uterine rupture, it's very small. It's like 2% or something like that is what they were citing at the time with the studies that they had. And I've read lots of studies afterwards, indicating that rate can be lower or higher based on what you do during the labor to the woman, right? So. Okay, so they're telling me I got a 2% chance of having uterine rupture, and I'm like, that means I have a 98% chance of not having uterine rupture. So I wasn't really convinced by the 2% that I needed to choose something different, because it just looked like to me that I had such a great chance of not having a horrific outcome. It's
Yeah.
like, well, so then why worry about it? Like, it's good to know that. That risk exists, but to me, I just it didn't factor into my decision making that much, right?
Yep.
Whereas they're looking at a 2% risk going, oh, this is horrible.
And a personal story of something going awry, right?
Exactly.
And not doing the work to resolve that within themselves and coming back to the facts so that they can help women, where they're at without bringing too much of their own baggage, which is like, I mean, it's a hard thing to do, but it's something
Yeah.
that they have to do in their profession. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's their responsibility,
Yeah.
right? Not their client's responsibility to fix that for them.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite understand that at the time either. Like, they
Yeah.
shared that with me and I was like, well, maybe I'll have a successful home birth, lovely experience, and that might help them. So,
Yeah.
like, and yeah. So, anyhow. It was so my prenatal experience was like a lot of fear,
Yeah.
which didn't help me prepare for having home birth, but it did put a lot of pressure on me. And and even my one that was supportive, even the midwife that was supportive, she explained to me what their guidelines were for how it was going to go. And the guidelines are very strict, and there's no wiggle room for any abnormality. So, every route seems to lead to repeat C-section.
Right. What were some of the things in the guidelines?
Okay, so any complication in pregnancy, we get referred to an OB, and then they can do shared care, but then you're the OB makes the call, right? They are the decision maker in what happens after that. So any deviation in pregnancy, I get transferred to OB. They wanted me to consult with an OB at 35 weeks, and I declined because I didn't see the need of that. But I can, like, in hindsight, I can see how they would have preferred that. But yeah, and then during labor, things like once I call them, I have to progress,
Right.
at a certain rate. So they're going to check me all the time. They're going to make sure that I'm dilating at least a half centimeter an hour, or a full centimeter every 2 hours. It was something like that. If I don't, then we have to go transfer to a hospital. And it was like a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
And then I but at the time, I guess I'm one of those people who I'm like, yes, I can meet that expectation.
Right.
I'm like, I can do that. I can do that because I'm
Right.
not easily persuaded that I can't do stuff. So I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna dilate, 1 centimeter an hour, no problem.
Right. And when it's presented to you, it's like you don't really realize what it could look like when you go outside of those boundaries, you
I didn't
know?
even consider it. I was just
No.
like, oh, it'll be like that. It'll be good,
Right. And depend,
because
yeah.
I'm an optimistic person too, right? So
Wow.
I want to believe that I can do these things. And but at the same time, and I think that's where the trauma also came in, is that I realized that I had absolutely no control over any of what happened with my second birth. So, and that was a big blow to, I guess, what do you call it, your ego or your psyche?
I think it's
You know,
deeper
it's
than
like
ego. Yeah.
it was a huge blow. It was like, I don't know what it was. It was crazy, but it fractured myself,
Yeah.
I guess, because I was like, I don't know, when you're young, you think you're unstoppable too, right? Like, it was, oh, I would have been like 27 at the time, so I just like, when I realized, oh, there's like limitations on me, and I don't have control over everything, and I couldn't control this, and I couldn't do anything to make it different. And it was just, yeah, I just kind of spiraled after that with my mental wellness, I guess.
And like you said, that you went back to the midwives because you felt good, like they were nice people.
Yeah, like I trusted them. I thought they made a good call. Like if they can't say they can't deliver a baby coming out the wrong way, I'm like, oh, fair enough. Like they did what they could. And I had a C-section. It was a pretty standard C-section. Like, it wasn't great because it's not as good as having a regular healthy birth. But I mean, in terms of recovery and everything was normal. I didn't have any complications or anything like that. So I'm like,
Yeah.
I felt like everybody did their job, and it was what it was, right?
So
And then,
before your second birth, did you feel trust in your midwives? And was that part of the trauma afterwards too, that, or was it more that you thought it could happen and it didn't happen, and then that was where it hurt more
oh,
deeply?
yeah, I certainly felt a sense of betrayal afterwards. So what happened is that I went past my due date, and I had read enough to know that going past your due date is not a big deal. Like, it happens because not everybody can just deliver their baby when they're told they have to. Seems like pretty obvious, but anyways. Yeah, so I had read enough about, like, because I read all the birth books, and I liked Ina May and all that stuff like that. So when they're like, oh, you're going past your due date, I'm like, well, yeah, it's fine. But
Yeah.
they're like, no, but you're a VBAC, you can't go past your due date. Okay, so because your baby's gonna get too big, and then you can't deliver the baby. But I already read
Oh,
stuff,
that's
so
what they said?
that's what they said, right?
Oh
Like,
my
the
God.
longer the baby stays in there, the bigger it gets, and then you can't have it.
Oh
And I'm
my
like,
God. Okay. Wow, I never heard that before. Well, anyway,
and I'm
yeah.
like, this is where the gap between like what I knew and what I was being told started to become like really obvious, and I just couldn't resolve it in my mind. I'm like, no, these they're midwives, they're supposed to be, naturally minded. This is my best shot. So that's the one hand I'm believing that, and then on the other hand I'm hearing like nonsense from them, and I know it's nonsense, right?
Yes,
So
yes.
because I'd read stuff before it, so there's like a big gap between like what I understood from what I was reading, what I was hearing on the other hand from people I believed had my best interest in mind. And so yeah, they're telling me the baby's gonna get too big, we gotta get it out, there's no point in keeping it in longer. Which I did. I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe there's no point in keeping it longer. I didn't know, right?
Okay.
So, yeah, and they're like, well, just based on how we run things here in Guelph, which is where I lived at the time, the obstetricians want you to have the baby out by 41 weeks. So, We're going to do what we can to make sure that happens. And then what we'll do is we'll schedule your cesarean for 41 weeks. And then if we can't get the baby out by then you can have your cesarean. And so that was an incredible amount of pressure because every
Yes.
night I felt like, oh, I have this like little twinge or I'm having these like Braxton Hicks contractions. I was like, is this it? Is this it? So every week from about 38 weeks up until, I passed 40 weeks, I had that on my mind. Is this the night? Is this the night? And I was trying to complete my master's thesis and defend it before my baby came.
Oh my God.
So like I had already pushed off my defense date, and my defense date ended up being 10 days before my due date. So psychologically, I was like, don't come out, don't come out, don't come out, don't come out. And then I got to like the my due date, or sorry, my defense date, my defense got over. I handed it in. I got my thesis bound and everything. And then I was like, okay, now to cut, time to come out, time to come out, time to come out. Because then I didn't want to go past the 40 weeks, right? So, my poor baby, I was like sending her lots of mixed messages, so no wonder she was confused.
Okay, and so what happened in the end?
Well, what happened in the end is that I went past my due date. We had a discussion about induction and all the various options that there are. And basically, what was presented to me is induction is better than C-section. And of
Okay.
the induction techniques, we start with like stretch and sweeps and breaking the waters and stuff like that, because those are like natural methods of induction, is how it was laid out for me. And I was like, okay, so I'll agree to some stretch and sweep so that we can get the ball rolling. And hopefully this baby will come out soon.
And knowing what you know about a VBAC, all of that interference doesn't help the VBAC,
No. Okay,
right?
so
Like
I'd read
inducing a
enough at that
VBAC.
point. Yeah, I'd read enough at that point to know that inducing a VBAC is like gonna make it more likely that you're gonna have uterine rupture and other complications, and more likely end in cesarean, right? I knew that. But at the time, I didn't have other options, or I didn't have any
Yes.
support,
Yes.
right? So I didn't have somebody telling me, like, why don't you just do what you want?
Yeah.
Right? This is your baby and your birth. You have good sense. You're a smart person. Like, you can make good choices. I didn't have anybody saying that to me.
Yeah, like what's wild is that they're supporting you. They're first in your body and in your intuition as a mother, you know what you want and you know what you need to do, right? One. Two, you've done the research. And so you have like scientific research to support what you want and what you want to do. And still they're going against all of that. You don't have other options. They're saying, well, if you want this, this is what you have to do. And it's the only way. Because if you don't listen to us, then there's nothing. There's like when you don't know what else there is, you think there's no other options. It's like such a wild place to be in.
Yes, exactly. And what's even crazier about that is I started hoping that I would give birth without anybody helping me.
You did
So,
already. Okay.
yeah, I started hoping that I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe I can be like one of those women that just like sneezes the baby out really fast before anybody notices. Like have a precipitous birth is what I was hoping for at the time.
Because
And
you hadn't heard of unassisted or free birth.
no, I what and then like I had a dream that I had an unassisted birth in the hospital. So I had a dream that I went into labor and I went in the hospital, but they were too busy to help me, so they just like left me alone and I gave
Okay.
birth to the baby all by myself. So I had a dream like that, and I didn't know enough at the time that, like, if I'm keeping having these thoughts, and that's my intuition talking to me, right? So at the
Wow, I
time,
have
I was just like,
shivers
that's
all over me. Like,
because I felt crazy for
you didn't
thinking those
even
things.
know. Yeah, you felt crazy. You didn't know any other woman who had had an unassisted birth, but you had a
No.
dream that showed it to you.
I
That's
did.
so
I had a
cool
dream
to
that showed
me.
it to me.
Yeah, it's so cool.
And I kept having these like thoughts and fantasies about like the birth being so simple and easy that I don't need help.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only person that hopes for that, but I think it was coming out of a place of knowing that like what I'm being presented with isn't all there was, and knowing that it wasn't making a lot of sense, right?
Oh.
So
Yeah, and your intuition and your soul kind of trying to tell you something.
It, like in hindsight, I definitely think that's what the case was, right?
Wow. Yeah.
So yeah,
Okay.
and then so I went past my due date. I agreed to the stretch and sweeps. Like, they were horrendous. They hurt more than, I don't think anything else hurts that bad.
Yeah, so just for anyone listening, a stretch and sweep is when they go into the vagina and they usually use their fingers, and they try to stretch the cervix open and kind of like what would be kind of like abuse.
That's what they call it. It used to be called stripping the membranes, which is probably more accurate. Stretch and sweep sounds like a nice little exercise. And they're like, oh yeah, this will probably hurt a little bit, but it was blinding pain. Like, I was seeing stars. It was horrible, and I actually remember tears coming out of my eyes because it was like intense. Like, I didn't enjoy that at all. And
So I had the
yeah,
same thing. They actually did it to me for my first birth with the midwives in Quebec for like
damn.
n absolutely no reason. At like
Did they tell you first at least that
they
they were going to do it?
did
Oh,
I
okay. Well,
think it
that's
was like
getting
39 and a half
better.
weeks, so I wasn't even past my due date. I was 24, super healthy, no problems, 25.
Did you say
At
30 weeks?
I was for like 39 weeks. It was
Oh, okay.
before my due date, and they were like, "We're just gonna help things along," and they put their finger inside and start moving it around, and it's like abuse and violation of the cervix to try to wake it up and make you have a baby. It like when it's like nonsensical. It's completely nonsensical. It's like you don't think my body's gonna work and open and birth this baby. Why do we need fingers opening our cervix for us?
The more I think about it, the more disgusting it is.
Yes. So I want to name that and yell it from the rooftops.
No, I appreciate that. That's a good addition. Because it isn't like, oh, we're gonna just tidy up the house and we're gonna sweep a little bit. It's like it's stripping the membranes, I think, is more accurate, because what they do is they separate the membranes from attachment to the cervix, which it's supposed to be, right? And it really hurts. And you know, anybody I know who's had it says it hurts. So and like more than contractions, like, you know, people complain about contractions being painful, but this is like, it's like a contraction on steroids, you know?
It's because it's violation. It's
Yeah, because it's not
completely
supposed to
unnatural.
happen. It's
No.
not supposed to happen.
Okay, so did you have many stretch and sweeps, or
I
did you?
did. I had three.
Yeah.
Three. So the first one, you know, I had it. I went home and I felt dreadful. Like, I got like kind of shaky. It made me feel like kind of vomity, like I had, or what do you say, nausea. So I just felt like sick, you know. I had some bleeding, and then it caused all these like little contractions, which is the purpose, right? It's supposed to cause some contractions so that those contractions will hopefully lead to more contractions, and then you'll have labor and give birth to the baby. And again, like the statistics they presented me with is like, oh, it's pretty, we can probably shorten your labor by up to a day or two, right?
I hate the shortening the
And
labor thing too.
I'm like, me too.
like let my
Why?
body labor as long as it needs to. Why does it have to be faster? You know, for who?
Yeah, exactly. For who? That's the problem, right? It's not for the baby, and it's not for the mother. It's for the care provider's timeline and their guidelines, right? So they got to get babies out at a certain time, and you know, if you don't get your baby out on your own, then we got to help you. So, I the experience was awful. I didn't enjoy it. Obviously, it kept me up all night. Like I was, like how tired you are at the end of pregnancy. And then I had a little toddler I was looking after because he was only 2.5 at the time. So I'm running after this little guy all day. And then these contractions are keeping me up all night. So even after the first night, didn't it was like it was exhausting. So the next morning they call me and they're like, "Oh, how did it go?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, I had contractions most of the night, but now it's morning and they pretty much stopped." And they said, "Oh, okay, so you can come into the clinic right now. We'll do another one."
Oh my God.
So I went into the clinic and we did another one. And they're like, "This is gonna get it going this time." I'm like, "Good, And then again, it was the same thing. More cramping, more blood, more like ineffective contractions that didn't lead to anything. They were, just far enough apart that they seemed like they were helpful, but they weren't. So it was, maybe 7 to 10 minutes apart. And that happened like for most of the night and then stopped again in the morning. And they're like, "So we'll come and do another one." So they came to my house. They did another one at the house, and they're like, "Well, we'll stay here and keep you company for a little while and see how it progresses." And I was just hoping it would, kick in and we start progressing. And then they said to me, "Okay, so this is we've been a couple of days now, and this is Thursday, and the only obstetrician in Guelph who will agree to supervise a VBAC in the hospital is working today."
Oh my God.
So he's not going to be working all weekend, and you have to have this baby by Monday. So on Thursday they're telling me that my C-section is happening on Monday, whether I like it or not. So at that point I had a whole bunch of stretch and sweeps which were horrendous and they weren't working. I was tired. I was like pretty much ground down. Like my will to do this any longer was
Yeah.
evaporated.
I mean, the stretch and
And
sweeps are like abuse. It's like
yeah.
a really nice boyfriend who's fingering you against your will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your body knows that, and so over time, it's demoralizing. And we don't
Oh,
sit,
yeah.
and like our mind or the worst thing is the mind doesn't even like the mind is like, "Well, this is what's supposed to happen. These people are good to me. These people are nice. These people are helping me have my birth." And then your body's telling you another thing. And so that
Yeah.
dissonance is like a really hard thing, to have. Okay. So.
Yeah. So yeah, and then so I felt between a rock and a hard place at that point. They were like this, it was more induction. They said we can do more stretch and sweeps over the weekend, and you can keep trying, keep going at this for more days. After 2 days, you don't want to do that anymore, or I didn't want to do that anymore, I should say. So that was option number one, or option number two is we go to the hospital today and get a real induction. So we're going
Okay.
to start nice and natural. We're just going to break your water and see how that goes,
Oh my God.
right?
Yeah.
And then so that's how it sounded. Or you can just wait until Monday and have your C-section on Monday.
Right, because even if you went into labor on the weekend, they weren't going to allow you to attempt your labor. Is that
Yes.
the choice? Yeah. Oh
Yeah,
my
yeah,
God.
yeah. So it's like get to Monday and have the C-section.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, so that's not a lot of pressure, right? Anyway. But so I was like, okay, so I lost my home birth. I was like, that's gone.
Okay.
Okay, goodbye to that. And now my option is induction or C-section. I'm like, at least if I have the induction, she's coming out now, like somewhat naturally. She's not having a C-section because I already knew at that point, the C-section baby is more likely to have breathing problems, more likely to have asthma and other, immunological issues later in life. Like, I'm like, at least if she comes out my vagina, that's the way she's supposed to come out. And I was like, that's better then. If I don't get exactly what I want, nice home birth in the pool, that's okay. At least she's coming out normally. And you know, every time I say normally or naturally, whatever, I always think about the C-section moms that are going to be offended by
Yeah.
that. But so many of them didn't need to have a C-section,
Yeah.
you know. So I'm sorry for if that was your experience today. I hope I'm not like making anybody upset.
Hey,
But
I know C-section moms who choose C-sections because they know the story that you're about to tell, and they say, I don't want to go that route with the induction and all the hell that that's going to be. So they go
And I
straight
don't
to
blame them.
C-section.
Honestly, when I got to my third one and I was like, I would rather have a C-section, it's just easier. Than do this again. So we went into the hospital. First thing they did was we talked to the obstetrician. He's like, yeah. He was like this happy guy. He came from Africa. He had the really cute accent. And he was just like so like upbeat compared to my midwives who are like, oh, a VBAC. He was like, yeah, we do whatever you like, you know? So yeah, he actually, I liked him. His hands are too big to be an obstetrician, in my opinion. Because he was like, he was huge. He was very tall. He had huge hands. And like when you do a vaginal check, I'm like, no, that hurts. I think there should be some sort of screening for that. occupational requirements, small hands. anyway, yeah, so this guy, he's like, yeah, we'll do whatever you like. So he basically was just there. He's like, well, I'll do what the midwives tell me to do. Yeah. And then so it was literally the midwives who were in control of the show. And they're like, yeah, it's time to break her water. So he did that for me. And after the water broke, that's when it was like, oh, so painful. Like all those like ineffective, lousy contractions I was having with the stretch and sweeps, they were just like so bad. It hurt so much. Because like when you break the water, you take the cushion away, right? So it's not like a gentle pressure against the cervix, stretching it out slowly. It's like head against cervix. It just hurts a lot.
They did that to me with my first, and it was excruciating.
It hurts like so much. So, and then I was really resistant because they're like, oh, you should probably, if we're gonna do this, you should probably get an epidural. And I'm like, no, I don't want an epidural because I know what the effects of epidurals are. And I just want to keep it simple. You know, I don't want any complications. It's already complicated enough. So I said no. I resisted the epidural for a long time and I labored like that. And then they kept checking me and they're like, oh, because when I went in there, it was like 2 or 3 centimeters or something like that. And then when we started the break in the water and I got to, you know, 3 centimeters, and then to 4 centimeters, and then hours and hours and hours later, I was there in the morning, so I think we went in around like 8 o'clock in the morning or something like that. I got to like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was like, this is just not working. And so like I agreed to have the epidural because I couldn't take it anymore. I was getting pain in like my whole abdomen was sore, but I was getting like this burning sensation across my belly button during the contractions, but in between contractions. And having pain between contractions is a sign of uterine rupture, or one of the signs of uterine rupture. So I was having some abnormal bleeding too, according to my midwives. And so they went to the obstetrician and they're like, look, she's having abnormal bleeding. She's having pain between contractions. This looks like, or it could be a rupture to us.
Oh my
Time
God.
to start talking about C-section. But yeah, but before we got to that point, like when I started having the pain between contractions and they put me on a oxytocin drip. And then like the contractions were just relentless, right? So they just like, they come back to back. They're really intense. I still put off having the epidural because I didn't want to make it more complicated than it needed to be. And then I got to the point where I couldn't take it anymore. So I asked for the epidural. The anesthesiologist came in and put the epidural in. And he didn't do it correctly. So it didn't work. I had numbing from only my knees down. And to determine that, they couldn't just ask me. I'm like, it's not working. and they have to do a test. So they get like a it's like really excruciating when you're in labor and having all this pain, and then somebody's running an ice cube up and down your body to figure out where where the sensation stops.
Oh my God, you think it can't get any more asinine backwards than it does?
So they figured from the test that I didn't have any sensation from my knees to my toes, which is not the place where you need the pain relief when you're in labor like that. So so they tried to like fiddle about with it. It never worked really. And then we got to the point where they were like, okay, so she's got the abnormal bleeding, and she's got the came between contractions, let's just do a C-section. And then the OB was like, okay, C-section time. And yeah, so in my mind, so like to them, this is just a day at the office, but to me, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they said I'm having these symptoms of a uterine rupture, and they told me I have 10 minutes to get surgery before my uterus explodes and my baby dies. So like this seems like life-threatening to me, even though to them they're just like, oh yeah, okay, it could be this, right? So I was scared and I was in a lot of pain and worried about my baby and myself. So and it took a long time for them to set up the surgery. So there was just that one doctor in the hospital, and they needed a second doctor to assist in surgery. So they went out looking for another doctor who could come in and assist, and it took them like 40 minutes before they could get another doctor. And in that time, I'm like, what's taking you so long? Why is this taking so long? And this is again, and not something that they disclosed to me during my prenatal care. They just told me I got 10 minutes to get the baby out before I die. They don't tell you that they're like, this is pretty normal to not have two doctors on call at the hospital ready to just do surgery the second that they decide it needs to be happening.
And this is
They
one
didn't
of
tell.
the one of the things we talk about with home birth is that it you think that when you're in the hospital you can access, surgery and like
Immediate care.
emergency immediately. But
Yeah.
even in the hospital, that's not the case. And what I've heard is
Yeah.
sometimes the home transfers, when you're in the ambulance, they can, because they call in ahead of time, that you actually
Yeah.
get like pushed through much more quickly
Yeah.
to immediate care. And so the time difference is there some night, like the midwife was telling me there's not much of a time difference. So
Yeah,
yeah, so it's
absolutely. And there's degrees of severity in conditions, right? Like, so I didn't realize at the time that there was anything less than a catastrophic uterine rupture. I thought like this is just worst case scenario, like uterus explodes, baby dies, mama dies, blood is lost. Like that's like I didn't realize there was like, slight dissonance or like little tears, stuff like this, right? Like it just seemed all like
Labor
doom
and
and
you're not in
gloom.
your right and you're not in your right clear conscious mind. Like
That's
I
true. Yeah,
emphasize that with
that's
women a
true.
lot. When you're in labor, it's like you're on drugs. It's
Yeah.
with natural hormones and with, synthetic hormones, you're not thinking clearly. So
Yeah.
yeah, you're in a
Yeah.
completely different space.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you have to wait 40 minutes and then
Yeah.
you
When I'm thinking like I'm dying in those 40 minutes, I'm thinking that I'm dying. And then like got my C-section, she came out, and I had a reaction to the anesthetic, so I started itching intensely all over my face and my upper body, but the worst thing was the shaking. I was just like shaking uncontrollably. My whole body was vibrating,
No.
and I couldn't hold her. So she was crying when she was born because she's alive and healthy, so that was a good thing. But it was hard because I couldn't hold her for about 40 minutes after she was born, because they're like, oh, we can't give her to you because you're shaking and you might drop her.
Oh my God.
So I was like listening to her cry, and like My husband was there. He did skin to skins with her, but she wasn't satisfied with that. You know, like baby when they're crying, they just want a nurse.
Yeah, they just and they could have figured out a way, you know, hold the
Well, they could have
baby
brought her
against the mother.
close to her. Yeah. Or they somebody eventually somebody just like I think my husband and the midwife just ended up holding her on my chest so that she could
Okay,
nurse.
eventually.
Yeah, but it was a long time before we like figured that out. I guess like well I think everybody was hoping I'd stop shaking soon. But it was like it took a long time and that was hard too. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I guess like I'm trying to think. Yeah, it was and then my stay in the hospital was good, so this time we worked it out so that somebody stayed with me the whole time, and that was probably the best part of the experience is that we like it was either my best friend, she came and stayed overnight, or David, my husband, he came and stayed the night with us, and then there was somebody there to pass the baby to me whenever she needed. Because that was a problem I had after my first one was born is like I had visitors, like my mom came in, my husband came in, but overnight, like there wasn't anybody in the room with me. So it took a long time for the nurses to respond when you push the button. And then by that time the baby gets all worked up and it was hard to breastfeed. So it was nice the second time around. I had somebody with me 24 hours to pass the baby to me whenever she needed or hold her. Because she didn't want to be put down in the little bassinet thing. So like David or my best friend, they were sitting in the visitor chair and kind of like snoozing with the baby like sleeping on their chest. And then when she woke up, they could pass her to me. But like this whole thing was, it wasn't just like traumatic for me. It was traumatic for my husband. He came with me. I had my mom there, my doula there, and David. And I guess he felt like I was in good hands because he just couldn't watch it anymore. He's like, this is horrible seeing me all hooked up to every tube and machine that they had available and not able to cope with it. So, like, when before we decided to have a C-section, he left the hospital and he went to go pick up my son from daycare. And he just stayed at home with Nathaniel. And then like when we decided that it's C-section time, then they called him to come back. And so he came back at that point. But that was another thing, like I felt abandoned because he deserted me. And so that was something to work out in our relationship afterwards.
It is really hard. I think that's a big thing that doesn't get talked about, but the husband's experience watching their women go through this insanity rigmarole at the hospital. And the doulas kind of sell the fact that they can protect women and families from it, but they don't. They can't. They can't. They don't do
Well,
anything.
yeah.
They can't.
No, I think the only way that they can is to help families to make choices where they don't get into these situations in the first place. Right? Like
But that means telling
encouraging.
people don't go to the hospital at all costs.
Yeah.
If
Well, yeah.
you're going to tell people, I'm going to hold your hand in the hospital, then that's not cutting it.
Well, yeah, it's like one of the reasons why I think really long and hard if somebody asks me to be their doula in the hospital. And like, I'm more inclined to decline that and tell them to find somebody else, right?
So Sam, we've already been talking for an hour, and I'm thinking, what do you think about doing like a two-part?
Yeah, we can do a two-part.
Okay. And
That's
because I
why I was
feel,
like, I don't know how deep to go into this.
yeah, I think the depth we've gone into is going to be so helpful, but I think the depth, I was thinking, oh, maybe we'll do the next two birds quickly, but no, I want to give those two birds just as much depth to bring
Yeah.
about the contrast. So
Well,
maybe
those are the good stories, so.
yeah, but it's important in contrast to these stories. I think women need to hear both. They need to hear the reality of the hospital the hospital experience, the midwife experience, and then they need to hear the reality of not doing that and what other options there are. So maybe before we close this part one, do you want to share what that postpartum experience was like for you? Because I want to then kind of compare them to your other postpartum experiences.
We can talk about that for sure. Yeah, so after the C-section happened, I was so happy she was just alive. So I had a bit of a birth high for a couple of days, and then we came home from the hospital, and I saw the birth pool all packed up, sitting in our hallway, and that hit me really hard. It's like that there's another birth pool that we rented that didn't get used. And then my mom came and stayed with me, so she stayed for a couple of months after she was born. Actually, she would stay all week, and then David would be home on the weekend. And so I always had somebody, and my postpartum like care was just about as excellent as you could ask for, right? But the way I felt was terrible. It took some time to sink in, actually. Like I was disappointed right off the bat. I'm like, okay, that didn't go to plan. But I was also living in this relief that she was alive.
And that you were
And
alive, right? If you
that I was
spent
alive. Yeah.
40 minutes thinking you were dying, then I'm sure you had relief
Yeah,
when you
yeah,
came out
yeah.
the other side.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
But all of that was created, right? Sometimes women will tell the stories, the hospital saved me. But when you dive
Yeah.
deeper, you realize, but they created that whole emergency scenario.
Yeah, and then what happened is that the midwives do home visits after, and so the same midwife that had been discouraging me from having a home birth, like she came, because she wasn't the one that was on call when it all happened. So she came, and then she's like, "Oh, I read your file," and I was like, "Yeah, I had another C-section at the hospital," and I gave her a couple of details about how that went, and she's like, "Oh, well, good thing you're in the hospital then." And then that's what that really hit me. I was like, no, it wasn't like it
So you knew
wasn't good.
already right
Yeah.
away.
Yeah, there were because there was some things that weren't making sense. Like I asked them like, why did this happen? Like, why didn't she come out after all of the effort that we put into this? So, like, why didn't she come out? And I was told that it was because her cord was wrapped around her neck. That was like keeping her in. And I was like, but I was born myself with my cord wrapped around my neck. Like I knew that. And then
And
I
so
know
many
that
babies are.
I'm like 30% of babies are born with a cord wrapped around. And they're like, no, it was just really tight and it kept pulling her back. Like a bungee cord or something. I don't know. That was their explanation for it. I got my medical files afterwards. It didn't say anything about her being too tightly wound up on your cord. And it said I had some scarring from my last surgery, like adhesions. But it didn't really say anything else. I was like, why was I having this belly button pain between contractions? They're like, oh, I don't know. Like my medical file said nothing about noticing any dissonance or any tears or any damage to my uterus. So I wasn't having a uterine rupture. So then I was like, why? Why am I having this abnormal bleeding? Why did I have this abnormal pain? And it just like the why of it, I just spiraled all around in that, like, why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why did this happen? And it was an obsessive sort of situation, which I recognize now as like a symptom of post-traumatic stress. To be that degree of obsessed with going it over and over again in your mind. And so I was looking for answers. I'm reading things on the internet. I'm reading books. I'm ordering them from other libraries so that I could read them, like stuff like that. And I did that for months and months after she was born. And then I'm like, I'm doing all this research. I should be getting some sort of accreditation
Yeah.
for this. So I looked into doing a doula program. And through the doula program, I met Billy because she was teaching other, like she was a doula instructor through Childbirth International. And so after I had the baby, everybody came to visit me and they're like, oh, you're so lucky you have a healthy baby. And I'm like, but it was a terrible birth. And they're like, the baby's alive, you're alive, everything's great. Which is true, but that's not what I needed to hear. And so when I met Billie, she was like the only person I'd met who'd been like, called it as it is and said, like, well, that was shitty. Right? And she's like, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Because I went to, because she was offering an extra like class in her basement about VBAC. So I'm like, I went to that. That's how I met her in person, actually. I'd kind of interacted with her online and then I met her in person, and just like meeting another human being who understands, and I got such a good education just from doing this class in her basement about VBAC, and then it was just so relieving that somebody finally got it, and shortly after that she started Birth Trauma Ontario. And she started holding regular meetings at her house for women who feel that they're or had experienced a traumatic birth experience. And just going there, hearing the other stories of these other women who had been through not exactly the same thing as me, but been through birth that didn't end up the way they expected and caused these symptoms that they were coping with, and talking about how do we cope with these symptoms, and how do we get better together? It was incredibly healing. I went monthly for maybe a year. Yeah, about a year.
Wow. And did that
And
help with your husband as well?
yeah, because then I could recognize like what was happening to myself and what happened with the birth, and realize it's not really his fault. Like he has his own baggage, right? Like his little sister, she died when she was only six. And so like he's every single pregnancy I've ever had, like he's even after we had free births and everything turned out good. Like the whole time he's like worried that I'm gonna just drop off and die or we're gonna lose our child, right? And then when that birth went that way, he couldn't support me. He's scared.
It was so it's triggering so much for him.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's terrifying. And that's and it made me think of, like, as I learned a lot about realistic expectations for your partner too. Like your partner
Yeah.
can't be everything to you.
Yeah.
And that's what I went into the birth, like my first couple of births, kind of expecting him to be everything for me. And that's the way our society is. It's like your birth
Yep.
partner is your husband. But husbands aren't, they don't go through any intense training to prepare them for this sort of stuff. They're also male, so they don't come equipped with the natural instincts to respond in an appropriate or helpful manner when their wives or their significant others are going through these things, which they don't have any like frame of reference for it. They're never going to carry a child. They're never going to give birth to their child. They're not going to know what that feels like. So why have this expectation that they're going to be everything and all, aside from actually catching the baby, right?
Totally. I feel like I put a lot of the postpartum care pressure on my husband for
Yeah,
this
that too.
past pregnancy. And so you saying that brings that up for me, and I'm realizing, oh, that's what I did. I put all of that, we put all of that on him, and he would have needed other people.
Yeah, we're not supposed to be an island to ourselves, not even an island with just one significant other. We're supposed to be part of a community. And
100%.
that involves like both men and women. And men and women bring different skills to that, and that's why we need each other, right? Like,
Yeah.
I'm not good at some things, David's good at those things. Let him do those things, right?
Did you
Don't.
feel guilt? Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
Did you feel guilt towards yourself that you like let it happen? Did you have to navigate that?
I blame myself for everything. 'Cause at the end of the day, I agreed to it all, right? Like, I said yes to the stretch and sweeps. I said yes to the water breaking. I said, like, I kept saying yes when I should have said no. And there was, I had hints along the way. I had red flags. I knew the difference between the research and what was being said by my midwives. I knew it a whole way, and I said I agreed to it anyways. And I'm like, what happened there? Like, why did I do that? And that was another part of the why. Why did I let this happen? How could I let this happen? And yeah, so I felt really awful about that.
What was the best thing that helped you with that guilt?
Talking to other people and realizing I it wasn't just me. Like, there's other objectively smart people that agree to, like, they make bad choices, or I don't want to say bad choices, but they made choices that weren't in their best interest, right? So, and realizing that it's a human psychology thing. It's not a me thing. When there's a white coat telling you what to do, then you tend to do stuff, right? Like, you tend to agree. When you're not presented with the full range of options, you choose from the options that you see. Like, you can't be, it's just a shortcut in life. You don't go, when you're given option A, B, or C, you don't go, what about D? Like, if you do that for every single choice, you're going to spend your whole life looking at options that you could have taken instead of actually living your life and making choices, right? So, but in this particular circumstance where it matters so much to me, that's probably what I should have done. I should have, like, looked into other ways of doing things, or but I just didn't have the connections, I didn't have the support or the resources at the time to do it. So, I think one of the most healing things I did was, as part of my doula training, excuse me, I did a reflective writing exercise, where I went through my birth experience and I looked at every choice I made, what my full range of options were, how my choices were and were not aligned with what my goals were, and what I could have done differently. And going through that process very intentionally, writing it all down, that was one of the most healing things I did once. And I actually avoided it for a long time because I just couldn't do it. But when I actually got down to it, I completed it, I felt some closure.
And then you went on to do things very differently the next time
Yeah.
around.
So I became a doula. I started going to other people's births, seeing how it was. That was also healing for me to see, that I could make a difference for somebody else, but also to see the ways in which the system works and what is controllable and what's not controllable. When I realized that I was really fighting an uphill battle right from the second I got pregnant with my second baby, I'm like, there was all these forces against me. It's not my fault I didn't get to where I wanted to be with that birth. So that was helpful too.
That's beautiful. I have shivers. I have some close people who are navigating all of that right now, so I think this will be very helpful to a lot of women. All right, Sam, what do you think we close this off here for today, and
Okay.
we meet up another time to do another hour so we give awesome space to your next two births that went very differently, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for sharing today.
Well, thanks for talking to me. I always like having a conversation with you, Emily.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you so much for listening. Aren't you excited to hear the rest of Sam's story to see how she overcame the trauma of her births and went on to birth two more babies? I don't think every woman needs to have more babies to heal from their births. I do think that attending to other women and doing birth work and sitting in circle and being with women is a great way to learn more and to help to change how we tell our stories and to perpetuate women being in tune with their bodies, listening to their intuition when they are pregnant and preparing their birth process and their motherhood journey. Sam is a doula working out of Newmarket and the surrounding area in Ontario. Her website is nurturingbirthsdoula.com. It will be in the show notes below. Part two will be airing in about a week, so stay tuned for that. And if you want to reach out to me, don't hesitate to do so on Instagram at thisrawmomlife. See you soon.